This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. From the late 1800s on, the area known as Newtown, north of downtown Sarasota, was reserved for African Americans who lived there through segregation, the civil rights era, and through the mass exodus of localized capital investment from the 1980s onward. With no doctor's offices and little access to medical care, Newtown had been left a healthcare desert until now. We'll talk about a new clinic serving multiple needs there in the second half of our show. But first, Florida's rainy summer season got off to an unusually wet start this year, with many areas seeing twice the amount of rainfall as normal. That sent water managers and scientists, wildlife advocates and residents, pretty much anyone who keeps an eye on the rain and the water levels in southwest Florida, scrambling to contain the water within Florida's ever-growing complex of basins, canals, and of course, Lake Okeechobee. The heavy rains put wildlife and ecosystems at risk, spurring state wildlife managers to close some areas in the name of protecting wildlife. Joining us today to talk about our summer struggle with rain, water, and what to do with it all is Randy Smith with the South Florida Water Management District. Welcome to the Gulf Coast Live.
Well, thank you, Julie.
Also joining us today is Pete Quashis. He's the Advocacy Director for the Audubon of Western Everglades to discuss the impacts of all that rain to southwest Florida. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Julie. Looking forward to it.
We are talking about the deluge of rain that kicked off the summer rainy season in South Florida. Are you seeing flooding or damage where you live? Give us a call and share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, Pete Quashis with the Audubon. Before we get into our summer wet season, let's take a step back in time. We were facing drought conditions, wildfires in much of our area. What were we seeing in terms of both water quantity and quality before this rainy season kicked off?
Well, I think what we're seeing is that there's a new normal. If you recall, even before we were in drought, we were having a deluge during last January. So it isn't that we're getting more rain, it's that we're getting it at different times of the year and probably in more intense quantities than our infrastructure is able to handle it. Ultimately, we need to flow clean water south. There's limits to how much water we can store, but every drop of water that we store or that we recharge as the aquifer helps manage this overall problem. We have three major problems. We've got dry season deficits. We have nutrient loading that impacts our fresh and our marine waters, and then we have to deal with the excess water to the environment's needs that happen when we have these storm events.
So, but Florida, Pete, Florida's always been known for its extremes. We've always had extreme heat, extreme weather, extreme, well, even hurricanes, I mean, which don't factor into this so much. But, I mean, we've always had extremes. Are you saying that these extremes have just changed their time of year to come around?
Well, you have to keep in mind that we haven't had a hurricane in over 10 years. And that we have an ever-increasing population and increasing ag use that is continuing to pump our aquifers lower and lower without the rainfalls necessary to recharge them. We also have increased development and increased drainage, all of which exacerbate the problem of what to do when you get an event like we had in the last couple of months and in January. I mean, we've had over 2 feet of water in two feet of rain in Fort Myers. None of the water that has been coming down the Caloosahatchee is coming from Lake Okeechobee at this time. We were lucky that the lake was low enough that much of the water that comes into the lake has been able to recharge the lake and raise it up to a level where we will have sufficient water, not only for ag and summer users, but also for the environment in the months to come. We're making progress. But we are making progress primarily on dealing with the low season flows, and we are making some progress on dealing with the nutrients, and we are in the planning process of what to do with these excess waters that we are seeing.
Yeah, we're making some progress. But Randy Smith with the South Florida Water Management District, can you give me a quick review of the rain South Florida has seen so far this summer? I mean, how much rain are we talking about, and how did the district respond to that?
Let's take a look at your area with the southwest coast. From the start of June, which we consider the start of the wet season, certainly was this year, 21.5 inches of rain already. That's about 10 inches more than you normally would have received for this same time period, or basically the southwest coast got almost 200% of their average rainfall in a short amount of time. The rainfall came in from the southwest. It basically filled up the flood control system in the southwest area, in the Big Cypress area. It went into the water conservation areas, which are the remnant Everglades that are managed, that are to the west of Miami-Dade, Broward counties, and to the east of Collier County. And this became very problematic for us because the water levels in the southernmost water conservation area rose dramatically, creating issues with the tree islands, which are critical for the wildlife that's there. This prompted Florida Fish and Wildlife to close off the areas for recreation due to the high water conditions. It was creating and still continues to a very hazardous situation for the wildlife that is in the area. It prompted the Department of Environmental Protection to issue an emergency order, basically allowing the South Florida Water Management District and some of our partners to perform operations using water control structures that normally cannot be used during this time of year for endangered species or are not used for other regulatory reasons. So basically, what the Water Management District had to do was implement these emergency operations to try to provide relief for the water conservation areas and the areas just to the north, which are called stormwater treatment areas. These are vital for the state of Florida to continue to meet its water quality standards that are mandated by federal law. So all of our areas that are either part of the Everglades or are very important water quality treatment areas were experiencing extremely high water levels, dangerously high water levels, that required the emergency actions to provide relief, which is probably going to continue for another 2 months, trying to bring the water levels down.
Mm-hmm. And before I go, I want to get into talking about the pumping back into Lake O and that type of water quality question. But before we get to that, there's an elephant in the room that I want to get addressed. People here remember pretty vividly last year's discharges from Lake O and the brown, murky water that came down the Coosahatchee. Then we had the explosive algal blooms in the St. Lucie River. All that was blamed on the unusually high rainfall levels. And now we've had 200%, as you said, just in this last month of rain that we normally get. Are we going to be expecting something similar to last year?
Well, not at this point. You know, you can never tell, you know, what kind of storm systems we may have coming through or what the amount of rainfall might be. But what made this situation different from other years is we were very dry before the wet season started with a bang. The lake levels in Lake Okeechobee were low, to the point where people were starting to be concerned about water supply. The rain hit south of the lake. It didn't really hit directly on the lake or, more importantly, north of the lake. If we had a lot of rainfall north of the lake in the Kissimmee River Basin, which is a very, very large area, that rainfall moves south and has the potential to raise Lake Okeechobee's level rapidly. Fortunately for us, in this particular case, the rainfall did not have a significant impact on Lake Okeechobee's level. It remains below 12.5 feet, which is below average for this time of year for Lake Okeechobee. So, you know, there was room in the lake, and fortunately we have not seen a rapid increase in the lake levels at this point.
So where were we at the beginning of June a year ago? Were we, the lake was pretty full at that point, wasn't it? I feel like I remember that.
Yeah, a foot and a half, almost 2 feet higher than where it is right now.
Yeah, and that's pretty significant because Lake Okeechobee is surprisingly fairly shallow.
It is. It's very large, massive in land area and water area. But as far as operation of the lake, which is conducted by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the levels that they prefer to see in Lake Okeechobee are between 12.5 and 15.5 feet on the high end. So you would generally expect to see 15.5 if you had an average rainfall year coming out of the wet season. So in this case, we do have considerably lower lake level than what we were operating with last year.
But because this is Florida, we don't want to start feeling too confident at this point.
Well, there's the unpredictable patterns of weather that we have here that you know, make it impossible to do any kind of crystal ball legitimate long-term forecast.
Exactly. Now, Pete Quashis with the Audubon, I wanted to ask you more about the excessive amounts of water south of Lake Okeechobee. What kind of impacts does that have on wildlife down there? We were talking a little bit about the tree islands that are so important. Those just disappear?
Well, they are potentially subject to being disappearing, but more importantly, the birds have to work on shallow waters in order to feed. And there are some birds, like the Cape Sable Seaside Sparrow, which nests very close to the ground. So that if, in fact, you end up with large quantities of water flooding those areas, those birds are stressed both in finding places to feed and in order to nest. So the impact on the wildlife is very significant. There's no question that we have to do that. The storms create problems along our shores. We've seen in recent times that we are a major stopover for the migratory birds, and we have lots of shorebirds nesting in southwest Florida beaches right now. These storms are a real problem for the ability for these birds to successfully raise some young. I think it's important to keep in mind, though, that when we talk about large quantities of water coming to southwest Florida, that most of that water in normal times comes out of our own basin. So even though we have had a tremendous amount of water in southwest Florida flowing to the coast over the last month or so, and again in January, that water was not coming from the lake. It was coming from our own basin. Then we end up with a period where after the storm event, we are desperate for water. We went through over 70 days between the early part of the calendar year and June where we were not meeting the minimum flows to the Caloosahatchee in order to keep the salinity balance correct, which provides the seagrass meadows and the filter feeder habitat necessary to help clean up the nutrients that are in the water. So it's a double-edged sword. We obviously want to see protection of our wildlife, but we also realize that we need to have the infrastructure in place so that we can move more water through the system. And that becomes sort of the basic issue that we're facing. Yes, there's a lot of water in the Everglades right now, but to put more water in the Everglades, you put at risk the built environment in southeast Florida, where there have been, unfortunately, developments into the historic Everglades that have guarantees for flood protection as part of the original Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program. So we need to get the federal funding necessary to build those projects, which build the infrastructure to allow us to manage more water flowing south. And we need the state to implement those programs that are necessary to get the water quality to acceptable levels so that when the water flows south, it does not do damage.
We are talking about the water quality and quantity in the Everglades, in Lake Okeechobee, and the fear of a repeat of last year's rainy season from Lake O discharges into the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Randy Smith, I wanted to go back to the pumping of water. In late June, the district started pumping treated water from stormwater treatment areas, normally headed south, back into Lake O. What was the purpose behind that?
The scenario that we talked about a little earlier with the southern water areas, water conservation areas, our very important stormwater treatment areas, which tend to be somewhat fragile, had dangerously high water levels in it. We were, under the emergency order, able to move as much water as we could physically get through the canals and the water control structures to the east and to the south. But our problem was inflows still continuing to come in to the stormwater treatment areas and the water conservation areas. So while we were trying to get water out to the south, we had more coming in from the north than we could move from the south. That's where we implemented using a shallow reservoir that has been complete for a couple of years now in the Everglades agricultural area with a connection back to Lake Okeechobee through a canal system. We wanted to be able to take water out of the shallow reservoir, move it to the north to prevent further southern flow out of that into the areas that absolutely did not need any more water. We looked at this carefully because with the shallow reservoir, came some initial treatment for the water. So we knew that the water quality that was going to go back into the lake was would have been touched by some treatment. And so
what
we
does
began
that mean?
The operation. It means that you had some plant life in it that was able to do natural cleansing of phosphorus, or the nutrient in the water that, that we dislike the most, to be able to have some effect on its concentrations as we moved the water back into Lake Okeechobee to provide some relief for the southern part of the system. And we felt like at the point that we were seeing as far as the water levels in general south of Lake Okeechobee, that we really did not have many more options other than implementing this operation to try to do the part as far as slowing down the water that was moving into the Everglades and the stormwater treatment areas.
And putting the wildlife at risk. What else was at risk? Was it what could it have impacted residential areas as well?
Well, we eventually thought that might be the case because these water levels were so high in the water conservation area. So a part of the emergency order was increased inspections of the levees that we call the East Coast Protective levee system, which basically development has built right up to the edge of the Everglades. It's separated by a four-lane highway, a levee, and then people's backyards are right there. That's how development has encroached on the Everglades here. So high water levels in the water conservation areas were something that we looked at from a human safety issue.
Mm-hmm. So tell me more about the water that does get pumped back into Lake. It sounds like from the way you describe it, it sounds like the last resort, like the least favorable option.
Well, it probably has always been considered a very unfavorable option. We've had to use it in cases where we've had extreme flooding and potential for life-threatening situations on the communities on the west, on the southeast portion of Lake Okeechobee to the western communities. And in this case, given the situation that we had with the wildlife, the dire situation that we had in Water Conservation Area 3A, I think it was a decision that the state agencies got together and said, look, we really don't have any other option, because the safety of the humans and the wildlife should be our priority when it comes to flood control.
Mm-hmm. So do you test the water before it's going back into Lake O to make sure it's not full of all these nutrients that we hear about in the headlines as being the cause of the guacamole sludge?
We do. We do extensive monitoring throughout the water management system, and certainly close to any areas where we are performing any flood control operations.
So you test that water before you pump it back into Lake O?
We do, and in this case, we did see good quality of water coming out of that shallow reservoir. I'm not sure that the operation could have been delayed if the results had been any different, given how bad shape that we were into the south. But fortunately, from what we've seen from the monitoring results, the water coming out of the shallow reservoir was fairly good quality water.
And Pete Quashis with the Audubon, when we talk about the nutrients that show up in that kind of water, you said that one of the challenges is addressing both the nitrogen and the phosphorus levels in the water. What do both of those nutrients do, and where do they come from?
Well, they come from all kinds of sources. But there's a fundamental difference between the concerns that we have in southwest Florida, where we are concerned primarily with marine algae. Those are triggered and fueled by nitrogen. So in many respects, fertilizer, septic tank, wastewater, leachate, all of that becomes a really major part of what would trigger a marine algae bloom in our coast that is devastating to our quality of life and to our bird life and our wildlife. Now, if you are in the freshwater pools in the Caloosahatchee, then phosphorus becomes more of the issue. You're worried about the blue-green algae that bloom. So we have a double-edged sword that we're concerned about. Most of the effort over the years has been to focus on the reduction of phosphorus in the stormwater treatment areas so that we can put water south without growing cattails in the historic Everglades. At the same time, we're doing the research now to try and we have a large complex at the Ortona Locks called BOMA, where we're doing research now to try and determine what technologies we will use in order to get the water cleanup elements that we need to better protect the Southwest Florida coast. There's another element I'd like to put into the discussion. At the same time that we were pumping water from the Water Management District was pumping water from the shallow basin down in the Everglades, the lake was low enough that the water coming out of the St. Lucie from its agricultural zone was backflowing into the lake. The lake has capacity to take that extra water, and we never know whether or not this very wet period that we're having is going to be followed by drought. So there is always concern that we get a sufficient quantity of water to meet our needs. There are times when the lake is low enough that even parts of the Caloosahatchee is backflowed into the lake. I looked last night, and it's still about 1,000 cubic feet per second of water flowing from the St. Lucie, from its agricultural areas, back into the lake. And, of course, that water is not treated. It is water that they are trying to prevent from going down to the St. Lucie estuary, where it might very well have a negative impact on its water quality. So this is a complicated mix with a lot of players. The beauty right now is that we have capacity in the lake to take this water, and hopefully in a few months we will be able to be assured that we will have sufficient water for the environment in Southwest Florida, as well as the water supply that we need. And we're moving towards that direction.
You've also mentioned that evaporation is a key component to our struggle to walk this tightrope in Florida. How does that have such a big impact?
It's huge. And when we think about Florida, we tend to think about water always running off. An awful lot of the water in Florida, in fact, evaporates up. So it during a large part of the year, the largest outflow from Lake Okeechobee is evaporation. We're currently involved in Audubon, as well as many other stakeholders and the Corps of Engineers and the Water Management District, on planning for projects in the western part of the Everglades and north of the Everglades. And the realization is that in many of these places, if you can spread the water out on the land and leave it there for a reasonable period of time, evaporation reduces a significant part of the volume. In fact, one of the interesting parts of one of the last workshops was that in normal waterfall in the Everglades, about as much evaporates as falls. But if that water falls in the western basin in the Big Cypress, much of that rainfall absorbs into the sand and recharges our superficial aquifers. So we're talking about very complicated and different environments. So we're talking about what happens in the historic Everglades, what happens up in the Kissimmee Valley, what happens in the Big Cypress. We are in the process, or the Corps of Engineers is in the process, of reestablishing the historic floodplain in the Kissimmee. That allows, when there's a storm event, for that floodplain to fill up with water. That gives it an opportunity to recharge into the aquifers, but it also provides large surface areas for which that water will be evaporated and moved to cloud storage, I like to call it.
Mm-hmm. And or humidity. Randy Smith.
And both.
That too, which we're well known for as well. Randy Smith with the Water Management District, I wanted to ask you about lawmakers in Tallahassee touted a reservoir south of Lake O as a big accomplishment coming out of their legislative session this year. What is that reservoir going to do?
It will provide more storage to the south, which everyone agrees is necessary. And so the Water Management District got the direction from the legislature. I think we're already ahead of the game on what the requirements are for initiating work with the Corps of Engineers on this reservoir. I think, speaking of the legislature, I think one of the most important things to come out of Tallahassee this year was the amount of funding for current projects. And I want to say that one in your backyard, the C-43 reservoir, which is right on the Caloosahatchee, received around $100 million worth of funding to complete the construction of this very large reservoir that's right on the Caloosahatchee River at the Hendry County line. This is a reservoir that can help capture local basin runoff and some regulatory releases from Lake Okeechobee, can take this, store it to where it doesn't bombard the estuary to the west with this huge amount of fresh water from local basin runoff from Lake Okeechobee. We're well into construction on this project. It's 170,000 acre feet. This means that we'll be able to hold back water to prevent it from overwhelming the estuaries wherever possible. In the dry season, the beauty of this reservoir is that it provides the source of, as Pete mentioned, there are times when the Caloosahatchee desperately needs water for its ecological health. This reservoir, scheduled to be completed by 2022, will be the source of water for the dry periods when the water is greatly needed. So, and with the legislators' help of the generous funding, it really lets this project, which, like I say, is under construction right now, move forward, staying on pace and providing great benefits for the Caloosahatchee.
And it's not the only project under construction. I mean, they're building additional storage up at Lake Okeechobee at the headwaters of the Caloosahatchee. At this research center at BOMA, we're seeing local projects which provide more water on the land. So, in fact, we have a lot of projects underway. We've all heard about the Picayune Strand project. When completed, and we're about, I guess, 80% complete, that'll provide almost 250,000 acre feet of water to the tributaries in the 10,000 islands. Fresh, clean water that's gone, you know, through the stuff. So the picture for dealing with the low water needs is pretty good. And I think the progress we're making in the planning process north of the lake and to the west of the lake on starting to address what we do about the high flows is also very heartening. We have commitment from the legislature. We have commitment from the Corps and the Water Management District, of course. And I think it's still going to be very expensive. It's still going to take a long time, but we're moving in the right direction.
Well, it sounds more optimistic than most of the reports I've heard recently about the Everglades and Lake Okeechobee. Do you feel, maybe Pete Cautious, that any of this was spurred on by last year's high headline-generating issue with the blue-green algae blooms? Or do you think this is something that's been going on for a long time?
It's been going on for a long time, but I can almost remember the turning point when there were feet of red drift algae on Sanibel's beaches, and Sanibel said, geez, we better join this fight in dealing with the issues in the Caloosahatchee. It's been a decade ago that I went to my board of directors down in Collier County and said, folks, if we want to protect the beaches of Southwest Florida, we have to look at where this water comes from. And it comes off of the parking lots in Disneyland. It comes down the Kissimmee. It comes through Lake Okeechobee. It is from our own watershed and our own backyards. None of these are silver bullets. But collectively, if implemented, if funded, if our federal partners can step up with the funding that they have promised us, we can address many of these problems.
And we're still in the process, so I wanted to ask Randy Smith before we end the segment today, what happens, Randy, if we do have an exceptionally wet rest of the summer because a lot of the things that we're working on aren't quite finished yet?
Well, we have had some dry weather after the initial wet start. We'll continue to operate the flood control system 24/7 if necessary, which has proven to be the case. And we hope that we can put the system, the flood control system, the canals and whatnot to protect us, to keep it in a level to where we're able to handle whatever Mother Nature sends our way.
Which is, as we know, very unpredictable. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. But I want to thank our guests, Randy Smith with the South Florida Water Management District. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Julie.
I also want to thank Pete Cautious, the Advocacy Director for the Audubon of Western Everglades. Thanks so much for being part of the show.
Thanks, Julie.
Coming up, a new clinic aims to fill a void in medical care for people in one Sarasota neighborhood with mission-driven medical students and so much more. We'll have that story next. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.